welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public, and we are glad that you are with us. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, Dave Thompson and I, Dave's our news director here at Prairie Public, will review the news of North Dakota and the region, and a special Matt Olien movie review, so to speak. It's Matt Olien's curtain call. We'll give Matt a fond farewell to his weekly movie reviews that he's provided our listeners here on Prairie Public for decades. We'll look forward to that conversation with our beloved Matt Olien. We begin Main Street today with a visit with Karen Solon from Fargo's Knitted Knockers. It's a group that's part of a worldwide network of volunteers who knit and crochet soft, lightweight breast prostheses for women who have undergone mastectomies or lumpectomies. These handmade knockers are free, comfortable, and are designed to restore dignity and confidence. And we'll hear how Karen became involved, how the group connects with survivors, and what happens to each knocker once it leaves a volunteer's hand. Karen, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you.
Tell me, if you would, Karen, and share with our listeners your personal journey on how you became involved in this group.
It all started with my daughter. She's a pathologist and she specializes in breasts. She was talking with one of her surgeons about a case and he brought up, does your mom knit or crochet? And she said, yes. And he said, well, give her this. And he brought up knitted knockers to her. So she sent me the information. I went on the web, found about it, got a pattern, started making my own. And then I connected with Arliss in Bismarck, who is another knitted knocker. And that's how I got involved. I started sending to her. And
this was in COVID time.
Yes, it happened during COVID. And so can't go anyplace, can't see anybody, you know, talk on the phone was it. So it was something that just kind of bloomed and blossomed and took off.
Can you give me the history of knitted knockers? Do you know how it became what it is today?
It started with a lady named Barb who had a double mastectomy, and she went to her surgeon for a checkup or whatever, and he brought this up to her. And so she got a pattern and she had her friend make it for her, and she was ecstatic. She said, women everywhere need to be giving these free. Now, the name Knitted Knockers was not her original name. She got it from another lady and she got permission to use the Knitted Knocker name. And yes, it's a play on words, but somehow it kind of brightens a lady's day, you know? So.
And these are women who maybe can't have breast reconstruction for one way or another.
Right.
And this is a much lighter, more comfortable solution.
Yes, they're lightweight, easy, breathable. You don't sweat with them on. It's an alternative if women choose not to have reconstruction. If they've had a lumpectomy and we can give you a set, you take out the fiber fill that you don't want, you mold it so it fits the side that you need help with. And some women just choose not to do reconstructive surgery. And so it's just an option we're offering to women, totally free. We don't ask for anything from the woman, nothing.
Tell me how it differs from a traditional prosthesis then.
Oh, well, just one prosthesis. A knitted knocker is a little bit of yarn with fiber fill that weighs maybe a couple ounces. They're totally lightweight, and the women who try them, one lady said, it's the best thing since sliced bread. She just loves them.
It's about comfort and connection,
yes.
Really. How do you let folks know what you do?
Well, right now, we are in the Essentia Care Cancer Center. We have them there. They hand them out. We are at the Broadway Surgical Clinic, where most of the women who have gone through Roger Maris or wherever will go there for checkups. We've got them there. They're in the breast clinic at Broadway. I've got baskets and information in most of the radiologists where you go for mammograms. If you go to the website, you click on our state, North Dakota, and you see who's listed with me and two or three other ladies. We have phone numbers.
I was surprised to learn that more than 1 million knitted knockers have been provided worldwide already.
Yes.
The need is rising.
Yes, it is. Right now, it's 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. And personally, I think it's more than that. Maybe it's because women are so much more conscious now. They're going in for their mammograms earlier. Things are being caught earlier, whatever. But yeah, knockers just passed in July. 1,025,000 they've given out since they started.
And counting.
And counting, yes. Walk
me through the process. Apologize, but I don't know the difference between knitting and crocheting.
Oh.
I told you off microphone. My wife does one or the other, or maybe both. I'm not sure, but how does Fargo's knitted knockers work? How does it work?
So far, the ladies will, I give them the yarn. We've been had some very gracious donations. So
this is a special yarn.
Yes, we have to have certain yarns, and most of the yarn we buy online. There are a few in town. Some of us women have certain yarns we like to use. As one lady calls us, yarn snobs, because we like to work with certain yarns. I'm very frugal with the money we receive. I will not buy full price yarn. I wait for it to go on sale. I wait for free shipping, whatever. So I distribute the yarn to my ladies. We meet, they give me the yarn back. I stuff them, and then I size them, and I package them up, and then I take them to the cancer centers or the clinics whenever they call me.
Describe the package that you're showing me right now.
It's an organza bag, and we put them in, and they come with a label that describes how to take care of them. They're very simple. I prefer just hand washing them in a little bit of soap and water. You hang them to dry, and the next day, if they're not quite dry enough for you, you just throw them in the dryer on fluff, and you're good to go. You don't unstuff them.
How long does it take you to make one?
A little A for me. I'm a crocheter. I can do a set of A's, which is 2, in about 2.5 hours.
And a set of A's is the bra size.
Yeah, it's the bra size. Right now, our group does A through double D's. And double D's take a little while. They're quite big.
Uh-huh.
I guess the biggest cost we have is mailing, because our group has picked up to help the state of Texas. We go on the website, I do, and there's a whole list of women. Every day it could be up to 25 women have listed their names that need help.
Who need assistance.
Yes, they've gone through the main website and requested knockers. And so we've picked up the state of Texas to help. I mean, I've got a lady in Minnesota I take knockers to in the cities, and she distributes around clinics. There's a couple other places in Minnesota that call me direct or send me information. I send them to them. We've helped women in Wisconsin, really, wherever. If they call me or email me anything, I will send them wherever.
Tell me what swimmers are.
Oh, swimmers. They're made with special yarn too, certain types of yarn, and they're stuffed with like loofahs or mesh netting. And so these dry much faster when women wear them in their swimming suits. And
They work. Do you hear back from recipients?
Yes.
What do they tell you?
Oh, we get thank you cards, and every time I read one, I get a tear in my eye. It makes my heart just so warm. They say, oh my God, I couldn't believe how this has affected me. It's given me back my dignity. It's made me feel whole again. You know, one lady said, she got the package and it sat there. She just, because she had been through all these other processes and nothing worked. And she said it sat there, and she let it sit there for about a week. And then she tried it on, and she walked out and showed her husband, and her husband goes, ooh, the nitties are back. I don't know. But it just warms you all the way through. It's like, it just works for women. It just makes them feel whole, gives them a little bit of their dignity, and it brings a smile to their face.
Have you volunteered your whole life, or is this something new for you?
I've never done this type of volunteering, no. I mean, I've done other volunteering, you know, with like blood drive, Vital Ed blood drives, and I do shawls and stuff for Sanford in the hospital, you know, stuff like that.
Tell me how this builds community among the folks now that you've come to meet.
Oh, us girls, oh, it's fantastic. We get together, and right now we're meeting at West Acres by the fireplace. They have big tables, and so we can meet and we exchange ideas.
Meet once a month or so in person.
Yes, you know, well, you know, a month, 5 weeks, whatever works out, and whoever can show up shows up, and we talk and we gather ideas and we say, oh, I didn't like this yarn, or what did you do different here, or, you know, oh, I got a new stitch here that really holds better. One lady, they come and told us about their vacation, they went overseas. It was, you know, it's just really building a bond, and it's just like being together and knowing how much we're helping other women. That's the best part.
Joining our conversation with Karen Sullen. She is with Knitted Knockers here in Fargo. They work to develop knitted prosthesis for women. I guess you would still call it a prosthesis.
Yes, it is.
That are much more comfortable than traditional prosthesis. If someone listening wants to volunteer, what would they need to get started?
Well, first of all, hopefully you knit. It's not something a beginner knitter would start with, but if you crochet, I can teach you to crochet and help you that way. One of our ladies called up and said, I want to do this, but I don't knit or crochet. And I said, okay, I'll come to your house, we'll sit down, I'll get you going on just a basic crochet, help you out, and see if you like it. And she crochets all the time. She absolutely loves it. It's amazing.
And what about women who need knockers? If they're listening to this and, man, this could help me, what should they do?
Yes, they can go to the Knitted Knocker website, and it's knittedknockers.org, and you can order a knocker. It's under one of the little tabs, how to order a knocker, and your name will come up, and I will pick it. If you're in North Dakota, where, you know, I will pick you and send it to you. It might come from Arliss and Bismarck if it's over that way. I have a phone number. You can text or call me, 701-367-7084. I will help you out however you want.
What has this taught you about yourself?
Oh, you're never too old to learn something. You're never too old to go out and volunteer and help somebody do something. It just, I don't know, warms my heart.
What's the future for Fargo's Knitted Knockers, do you think?
Oh, I hope we can keep going forever and ever. But my best, most gracious, hopeful thought is we would have to quit because we aren't needed anymore. Hopefully that, maybe one day that'll come.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would be wonderful. But until then, we're hard at it.
Things are getting a little more expensive for you.
Yes.
You're a nonprofit
total
organization.
Nonprofit.
You can take donations.
Yes, we can. I specifically only solicit when we get really low on funds. I mean, the Horace Lions have been very generous. The Harwood Legion Club, Thrivent has helped out one of our ladies, and she shares with us. Other ladies have just donated, you know, $10 here, $20 here, but you don't understand that $20, I can get almost 4 skeins of yarn at a sale price. And out of those 4 skeins of yarn, I can get a lot of knockers. So even a little bit goes a long way with us, totally.
My guest has been Karen Sullen with Knitted Knockers. It's a group around the country, but also here in Fargo, that knits.
Knits and crochets.
Very comfortable, fine-looking, I'll say.
Yes, we
knockers
like to do,
for women.
Yes, we like to do fun colors because they're not shown through your bra and nobody sees them except you know they're there. And one lady said, you know, it's so nice I can go and open my drawer in the morning and I get to pick out fun colors and nobody knows except me. So,
Karen,
they brightened it.
It's been a pleasure. And congratulations on what you do.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me and sharing our idea.
and by Jade Presents, bringing the Avett Brothers and the Milk Carton Kids to Bluestem Amphitheater in Moorhead, Saturday, August 30th. Ticket information at jadepresents.com.
In the Main Street studio, and we are happy to see that Dave Thompson, Prairie Public's news director, is with us. Of course, it's Thursday, Dave, and we like to review the news. How are you?
I am doing very well, Craig. How are you doing?
PSC has weighed in now on DAPL environmental impact statement, and of course, DAPL stands for Dakota Access Pipeline. What's the latest?
The Corps of Engineers is going to be ready to have an updated environmental impact statement soon. Basically, the governor's office has asked state agencies that have dealt with DAPL pipelines, the siting, things like that, to weigh in. And they're going to take all those comments, send them to Corps, and hopefully they'll weave into the EIS when that is released. Now, what the PSC did is basically say there are some things that we did right on this pipeline. And some of the options, if they were to deny the EIS, one of the options would be to actually dig up the pipeline. And the Public Service Commission objects to that because they say that would be more environmentally harmful than just leaving it in the ground. They're still waiting for the ruling, and they think the ruling is going to come soon.
And Dave, of course, last October, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe filed suit against the Corps for continuing to operate the pipeline without a necessary easement. What's the latest there?
The latest is that the federal court in D.C. has basically put that whole thing on hold and said, Dakota Access, you know, the energy transfer partners, you can still operate the pipeline. So they can still operate the pipeline until the EIS is decided.
Dave, Health and Human Services now has launched a survey for the Rural Health Transformation Program. This has the potential to inject a lot of money into the state over the next 5 years.
It does. It's a fascinating thing about the survey, because they're looking for feedback on how to shape up this new transformation program. The One Big Beautiful Bill is where this comes from, that they want to build a stronger and more sustainable rural healthcare system in North Dakota. And that could bring $500 million in the state over the next 5 years, a time when that money is really needed in North Dakota, because there's some uncertainty about other healthcare money coming.
Somewhat related to healthcare is emergency response, Dave, and a legislative interim committee is looking at emergency response services.
That was a really interesting hearing for a number of reasons. Number one, we heard from the fire departments, both volunteer and professional, and they're looking for people. They're stretched pretty thin. They want people. And in the EMT programs, and we're talking about ambulance service, things like that, they really are stretched. As a matter of fact, one of the EMT services that serves Bismarck Mandan had one of these open houses. Come on in, we'll pay you to come, we'll pay you a salary, we'll hire you right away. Only one person showed. So they're trying to get some interest. One of the things they're talking about to attract more people is go to like Australia and to the United Kingdom, where there are actually more EMTs than they need. So they might be able to bring some of those people over here.
Dave, two natural gas pipelines are competing now for $500 million as a financial backstop from North Dakota. What's that about?
Well, this is about bringing natural gas from the Bakken to eastern North Dakota. This $500 million would basically, the state would buy capacity on the pipeline. And that would help spur the project on. Well, something happened with the Industrial Commission today. They voted to support the construction of the pipeline, and they authorized the Pipeline Authority Executive Director to begin contract discussions with WBI Energy Transmission for the purpose of purchasing that transport capacity. Now, WBI, we talked to the people afterwards, and they said, we see this as a bridge to get the project started, and hopefully we may not have to use very much of that money, but it is there to help the project get started.
Dave, I'm wondering, since it's back to school time in North Dakota, what's the status of North Dakota's superintendent of public instruction? That's Kirsten Basler. Of course, she was nominated to become the assistant secretary of elementary and secondary education for the U.S. Department of Education. And that was quite some time ago.
It was quite some time ago, and she's still on the job as DPI superintendent in North Dakota. No idea what's happening, no idea what the timeline is, and if it's actually going to go forward or not, because there's the move by the Trump administration to dismantle the Department of Education.
Dave, what are you and your team working on?
Well, I'll tell you, there's been some more controversy over these confined animal operations, these big animal operations for cows. Two of them are going to be built in North Dakota by Minnesota firms. There's one that's close to the Red River, and it's causing a lot of consternation. There are people who are close to the Red River who are worried about pollution, and there are protests in Winnipeg today because they worry about some of that stuff getting into Lake Winnipeg. So there's going to be some, shall we say, some dispute over that. And this group that held a news conference in Bismarck to talk about this has gone to the governor to ask the governor to sit down with their community and say, okay, what do we need to do?
Dave, are these large dairy farms that are contemplated?
These are large dairy farms. There are no dairy processors in North Dakota. They have to ship the milk to Minnesota.
Dave, we review the news each and every week with you on Thursday. Thank you so much for joining us again on Main Street.
You are very welcome, Craig.
Still ahead on Main Street, a fun conversation, but somewhat sad. Matt Olean, he's volunteered his time to provide us movie reviews for the last 25 years, and now he's bringing down the curtain. We'll give Matt a fond farewell from this part of his life. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
That music tells us it's again time to visit with Matt Olean, and for years, Prairie Public listeners have turned to Matt for more than just movie reviews. Week after week, he shared not only his keen eye for film, but also his love for storytelling, history, and culture. His voice has guided us through blockbusters, hidden gems, not-so-good movies, and everything in between, helping us see movies are more than just entertainment, but reflections sometimes on who we are. Today, with deep gratitude, we recognize Matt as he brings down the curtain on his long-running movie reviews. His contributions have been a gift to our listeners and to all of us here at Prairie Public. And Matt does this all as a volunteer. His main gig here is being an Emmy Award-winning producer in the television service here at Prairie Public. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig.
Matt, you've been reviewing movies a long time for Prairie Public. Do you remember your very first review, and how did you step into that role? What did it feel like?
I don't remember the first review at all. I think it was around 1999 or 2000 that Bill Thomas, the former director of radio, we kind of talked about this, kicked it around. And yeah, it's definitely a volunteer side thing that kind of became a permanent thing on Main Street, or Hear It Now as it was called then. I don't remember what it was. I do know that Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring in 2001, I did review that, so it had to be around there or before. So I'm thinking 25 or 26 years I've been doing this weekly. So it was somewhere along, you know, the Gladiator, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring year, somewhere in there, I'm guessing, is what it was.
Matt, over the years, has your approach to reviewing movies changed, do you think? Or have you kind of followed the same tenor of your movie reviews?
I think what you got to do, and I have friends that do this in the business. My friend Roger Moore, who's I used to work with at UND, he's still a film critic. He's 5 years older than me, and he lives in Virginia now. Greg Carlson, of course, our friend who teaches film at Concordia College. He also writes for the High Plains Reader. I think you have to find a way to tell people whether you like it or not and why. It's not just enough to say, you know, I don't like this film or whatever. It doesn't fit into my wheelhouse. I've read books. I've studied film. I know how they're made. I know how they're constructed. I know when a film doesn't quite reach the beats it's supposed to, or the emotional beats, or things are over-directed or under-directed, or maybe the script is too much or the music is too loud in the background. There's little giveaways that can lead to a film not being what it should be. So you got to kind of tell the audience, okay, this is why this is not working for me, you know, and people don't have to agree. They don't always have to agree. I think over the years, though, and we'll get to this in a bit, Craig, it's been a little harder and harder for me to relate to the comic book film the new teen horror film, right? And we can talk about this when you kind of ask what's, you know, why I'm stepping away from the weekly film review. And that's been a challenge. And I think the challenge there is you have to think like the people that want to see that movie, because I'm not the demographic. I'm 60 years old. I am not the demographic for Clown in a Cornfield or, you know, the horror film with Sydney Sweeney last year. I'm not the demographic. And theoretically or realistically, why would some 20-something care what I have to say about Clown in a Cornfield or the new Fantastic Four movie, even though I did generally like the Fantastic Four movie? So I think the biggest challenge for me has been trying to objectively analyze something like Thunderbolts or, you know, Doctor Strange or whatever like that, as I would Apocalypse Now, Lawrence of Arabia, The Godfather, Tar, which was a great movie a couple years ago, you know, Oppenheimer, Barbie, these kind of things, because they're very different films. And I was raised by my dad, who got me into movies, on kind of these human drama films. He liked serious human drama films. He liked comedies too, but that's kind of my wheelhouse. And my friend Brent Brandt says I like depressing films. And I don't know if that's completely true, but I would rather watch The Deer Hunter for the 10th time than probably go see, you know, the new teen horror film. So that's a challenge, is to keep relating to that audience, and it becomes more of a challenge as one kind of ages out of that demographic.
So Matt, as you look back on some of your reviews, anything that you would do differently, a movie that you've thought about maybe that has changed in your mind over time, and I'd write that differently today?
I think I trashed Shutter Island initially, the Martin Scorsese film, and as the years went on, I began to realize that was kind of a really interesting film that he put forth with Leonardo DiCaprio and kind of the twist ending. That was one I think I was wrong about. I don't know when the film review started. If it started in 1999, then I probably did not like Talented Mr. Ripley, and that film has grown on me over the years as well. And sometimes there's been a movie that I liked initially that I look back on, I don't think that holds up anymore. So there's always a few, and I think it's totally fine to look back and say, you know, I was wrong about this, or in my mind I was wrong, or I was a different person then when I saw it. And that's another key thing with movies, Craig. When someone sees a movie, what age they were is crucial. It is, I mean, I have these memories of going to The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now with my dad when I was 14, because I had to go with him. They were R-rated. And you walk out and you feel like you're changed, like something changed in me with movies like that. And I don't know that I get that rush anymore coming out of a theater like that, because something is lost over the years. But yeah, when someone sees a movie in their lifetime is really crucial to how they view it.
Our listeners should know, Matt, that you are one of Fargo's great trivia competitors, also a decent golfer. So when you're at these events, do you have people that have ever come up to you and say, Matt, you are wrong about this movie or that movie? What are you thinking?
Occasionally. Mostly it's, oh, we like listening to it, that kind of thing. Or they might ask me a trivia question about, you know, I was born in this year, what were the 5 best picture nominees that year, or something like that. So sometimes that happens.
Matt, we've talked about this a little bit before on Main Street. Of course, the industry has shifted in a major way. I mean, in my lifetime, from VHS to DVDs, and now, of course, to streaming, blockbusters to indie surges. And you talked about the demographics are changing. How have those changes shaped the way you've had to review films?
Well, I think since COVID, we've seen a major shift in the theater going experience. And a lot of people I talk to, younger than me, you know, just aren't going anymore. And so I think the future of the theater model remains in doubt to me, whether it can sustain itself. Steven Spielberg has talked about, you know, maybe in 10 years there are no film theaters. Maybe it's all streaming. I don't know. It's certainly, COVID changed a lot of things in our lives. That was the one thing it changed that I didn't see coming. It was like, wow, the film industry is going to be changed. But they had to adapt. They had to release different films. There was not a lot of product in the pipeline in 2021, 2022, 2020. And those 3 years especially, Craig, resulted in, I think, some less quality films winning Best Picture, like Coda, like Nomadland. Nomadland's a good film. Is it going to be remembered 30 years from now? I don't think so. Coda is like an after-school special that caught the public fancy. So I think since COVID, the challenge for me has been, are movies really the be-all, end-all artistic thing in this country? And I think television has essentially replaced it. So many people watch episodic television. They stream, they watch, you know, they binge watch. The only thing I've ever binge watched was Game of Thrones. Otherwise, TV is not really my wheelhouse. And I end up, when people talk about, hey, have you seen, I kind of have to have a blank stare and said, no, I don't. I mostly see movies. But I do think television artistically has replaced movies, I think, in the last 10 years in terms of what is in the public consciousness of what is my go-to for watching something I want to watch. The other thing that happened since COVID, Craig, and Greg Carlson and I talked about it on this show, I think if someone's going to go to the theater, they do not want a depressing film. They do not want something like Licorice Pizza, which came out 3 years ago from Paul Thomas Anderson, which, you know, I liked it, but some people didn't. They don't want to go see, you know, Poor Things with Emma Stone. They want to go feel good and have a comedy because it's costly to go to theaters. It really is when you throw in the popcorn and everything. And I do think people's attitudes have changed since COVID. They're not as willing to go see that small, independent, possibly depressing film that's artistically done as they used to be.
We're enjoying our conversation with Madeline for years, every Thursday here on Main Street and with my predecessors. Matt has given us the courtesy of his time reflecting on movies that he has seen, giving us movie reviews that are really unlike any other. Matt, were there weeks when it was hard for you to find a movie to review?
Yes.
Or hard to find the right words to even watch or review a movie that you just watched and you went, oh my God, why did I waste my time here?
And that's one of the reasons I'm stepping away. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard some weeks. I look back at this year, Clown in a Cornfield. You know, I went to that because there was nothing else to see. I would say that happens more to me than it used to, which is one of the reasons it's led to this decision, is do I want to go see that movie? You know, and so it is tricky sometimes when there's not a lot of movies in the pipeline, like, you know, the non-summer season, the non-Oscar season, which tends to be October through December when you're seeing those Oscar bait films. So yes, it's a challenge sometimes finding something I want to go see.
All right, Matt, let's get into brass tacks here. After decades now, you've been sharing your time with us. Why do you feel now is the right time for you to step away from bringing us these movie reviews?
Well, I've been doing this about 25, 26 years, and I think at this stage of my life, and again, I'm healthy, there's nothing weird going on here, but I just feel like, again, this is not my full-time job. It's a side thing that I've done here. My full-time job is in the television department. That will continue. I think in the last year, this has been gnawing at me a little bit. And it's when something gnaws at you, Craig, and it won't go away, there's something going on. And when something fun becomes more of a chore, not as fun, wearing, then I think it's time to step away. And I think my desire to see as many first-run movies as I have most of my life has waned. And I think what I said is there's some weeks where, you know, half of the movies I see probably in the last year, I probably would not have gone to if I wouldn't have had to do the film review. And I've loved doing this. I want to thank all the listeners who come up to me. I mean, it's not, when I say a chore, it's not physical work. It's just, you want to have fun going. And I think I've aged out of the demographic for half of the films I probably go see. You know, the teen horror movie, the comic book film. You know, that is not who those films are made for. And sometimes I think maybe I'm not giving it the completely objective fair due that it deserves. You know, and in a moment of reflection, maybe I'm not the right guy to, you know, talk about the new teen horror movie or the new comic book film. I can still break down films as good as anybody, I think. I can explain what went wrong, why this is good, why this isn't good. I'm still involved with the Fargo Film Festival. I'm on the narrative feature jury this year. I have my 3 film series every year at the Fargo Downtown Library. But that first run film week after week after week, I think, has just been gnawing at me for about a year. And it just doesn't have quite the enjoyment it used to. And I don't want to be the 75-year-old guy complaining about the new horror movie, because that's ridiculous. I mean,
Matt, I complained about every horror movie you reviewed. So
I know you did, but you know what I'm driving at is is the angry old guy, and I'm not old, I'm 60. Like, why is Rex Reed still reviewing films at age 86? It's embarrassing. He was never a great reviewer anyway. He's still reviewing movies. And what does he have to do with anything in modern cinema, you know? And so I don't want that to happen. I'm still going to see movies when I want to. You know, Wicked's coming up.
Will this change the way you watch movies, do you think, Matt?
No.
Are you going to enjoy them maybe more without the pressure of
maybe a little
having
bit.
To remember things about the show? Sure.
Maybe a little bit. And I had an epiphany moment about a year ago when I said this has been gnawing at me for about a year. And, you know, I have a busy life outside of work. I do a lot of things, go to concerts with friends or a friend or whatever. And sometimes it's hard to squeeze in, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday night to go see a movie. And then you and I record this review, you know, Wednesday or Thursday or whatever. It's tricky. But I saw Lawrence of Arabia last year at Westacre Cinema. And my goodness, that film on a big screen, and I've seen it on the big screen before, is jaw-dropping, as you know, Craig. And I walked out of that theater, and you and I talked about it the next week that I'd seen this. And I remember being exhilarated and depressed at the same time. Exhilarated because of what I just saw. Depressed because I remember thinking, you know what, I may never see a movie again this good. Maybe I've seen every great movie I'm going to see. And the first-run movies, even though, you know, Tar and Oppenheimer were great, I kind of thought, I don't know that I'll ever see a movie this good again. Lawrence of Arabia, Godfather 2, that kind of thing. And it was a little depressing, and that was also part of this epiphany moment of, you know, maybe it's time to step away if that's my attitude. I saw Apocalypse Now recently. I mean, there's no movie out there like Apocalypse Now. There's nobody filming a movie in the Philippines for a year. Martin Sheen had a heart attack. I'm not suggesting we should do that every time. It's not cost effective, but sometimes with all these CGI films that we see, Craig, and a very good friend of mine who goes to movies with me, she said recently, sometimes I'm not sure what I'm seeing in a CGI film. Is that a set? Is that a real set? Is that a green screen? And so there's this lack of realism, I think, that has creeped in over the years. Let's call it a showmanship has been lost. David Lean doing Lawrence, Coppola doing Apocalypse. There's a showmanship aspect that I think has been lost, and some of these movies feel like they're on an assembly line with the CGI heavy stuff, and you're not sure what you're looking at, and I don't know that that's my favorite thing to do.
Matt, what do you hope we, your listeners, will remember most about your years of movie reviews?
Just that I love movies, and I will still go to movies, but I'll go when I want to. There's some coming up I want to see, like the Spinal Tap sequel, Wicked Part 2, Waltzing with Brando, with Billy Zane playing Brando in his attempts to build that hotel on his island in the early 70s, the new Paul Thomas Anderson film. But I hope people understand that I've kind of dedicated my life to this, you know, working on the Fargo Film Festival, things like that. I've seen thousands and thousands of movies, and I hope that the joy comes out. And if the joy isn't quite there anymore to see half the movies that I'm probably seeing, you know, that I maybe wouldn't go to otherwise, then I think it's just time for me to, at this stage of my life, to, you know, to not come in and do this. I'll still come in and, if you guys want to talk about remembrances or something big that's happened in the film industry, the Oscar preview, we can do that. I'm still across the hallway from you guys, so that's easy. But hopefully people understand that I'm open to talking about movies if they see me out or want to email me or whatever, text me. I'll talk about movies anytime, any place, anywhere with anybody. And I think that joy, hopefully that joy comes out when people listen to me talk about them.
Matt, give us one last piece of advice about how we should watch and think about movies.
Well, they're an art form, and they were not an art form when they started. It was, you know, people went to the Nickelodeon and watched something in like 1903. But eventually, if you get into the 1920s, you can see that there's something like the Battleship Potemkin, Sunrise, films like that, Greed. There's an artistic thing going on. You can tell the way something's put together visually. I just mentioned Apocalypse Now and Lawrence of Arabia. Those are jaw-dropping movies. You're seeing actual sets, actual people in actual locations where these events happen or have happened in the case of Lawrence of Arabia. So I know people just want to laugh sometimes and go to a nice rom-com, and that's great. And I think that's one of the things where theaters are struggling with right now is getting people into theaters to watch human drama films without special effects. But just have a good time, enjoy it, but also understand that you're watching something that a lot of people have put their life, their heart and soul into. Some of these movies that I watch on the film festival circuit, Craig, there's very little money behind these movies, but they're putting their life on the line, their money, their credit cards. It's a tough business. And I think maybe I want people to understand that. This is a hard business to get into and succeed in. It's not glamorous. It's work. I know a lot of people that work on film sets. It is hard, long work, and it's tough work. But films do bring money and economic development to the states where they shoot in. I wish the state of North Dakota was more progressive. I've talked about this. Margie Bailey has talked about it in offering tax incentives so that the movie Fargo could have been shot here, or The Revenant could have been shot in, you know, northeast, northwest South Dakota, where it all took place, the Hugh Glass story. But they weren't shot here because there's no economic incentive. So that's my hope, is that some lawmakers out there might realize, you know, this might be good business to have a big film shot around Minot or Bismarck, but the desire is not there for that. So it's a tough business. It's a hard business. People work a lot of hours doing this. And so when you watch a movie, maybe stay for those closing credits once in a while and see all the people that put their life on the line and their heart and soul into making that movie.
Matt, you wanted to offer a Terrence Stamp remembrance.
Yes, he died at age 87. Great British actor. Ended up playing a lot of villains as he got older, but initially he was kind of a matinee idol with Billy Budd and The Collector, and he's kind of that era with Michael Caine and Albert Finney and Peter O'Toole, and a great second half to his career. He comes back after kind of a period away from movies in the 70s to play General Zod in Superman, because he said he wanted to meet and work with Marlon Brando, and he did have scenes with Brando in that film. And then in Superman 2, you know, Zod becomes the big villain. I think when he died, that was the part people remember, was General Zod. But late career, so good in Steven Soderbergh's The Limey, so good in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. His farewell performance was about 4 years ago in a very underrated movie called Last Night in Soho. He had beaming blue eyes, remarkably good-looking man when he was younger. Sir Larry Wildman in Wall Street, he played that, you know, the guy that kind of saves the day by saving the company that Charlie Sheen is trying to, you know, have go under with Michael Douglas as Gordon Gekko. So great actor, age 87, rest in peace, Terrence Stamp.
Matt, the last trivia question we'll ask about Academy Awards. Which movie won the very first Academy Award for Best Picture, but it was called something different then?
Well, there were two awards that year. Wings won Best Production, if that's what you're asking.
Yes.
And then there was something called the Unique or Artistic Picture, which went to F.W. Murnau's Sunrise. That was the only year that they had a kind of a second Best Picture category, if you will. After that, it was just Best Picture.
I'll point out that Wings is a silent picture, it is. It's now in the public domain, Matt. You can watch that at any time. All right, Matt, I just want to say thank you.
You bet.
For your countless reviews you've shared with me and certainly for our listeners over the decades. You're a thoughtful guy, and I think you bring joy to our listeners in your passion for film. You've enriched my understanding for sure, and I think you remind us there's still stories to be told on the big screen,
and
that it's worthwhile to consider going to good movies. And I'll miss your weekly reviews, Matt. Thank you very much for sharing your love of movies with us.
Thanks, Craig, for having me today, and I hope listeners understand. I really appreciate everybody listening. It's just, you know, going to a weekly film review is just not my thing anymore. And, you know, that happens to a lot of people as they reach a certain age. They stop going to first-run movies as much as they used to. But I appreciate everybody listening over the years, and I'm still here to talk about movies anytime people want to talk.
Might as well step aside, Matt, when you're on top, buddy, and you are on top with your movie reviews. We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for August 21st. When European settlers arrived in the area along the Pembina and Red Rivers in the 1600s, the land was already home to the Assiniboine and Lakota. They were later joined by the Chippewa, who migrated from the east and became the dominant tribe, pushing the others farther west. The indigenous inhabitants formed trading relationships with French trappers who often married Native American women. Their descendants continued to live in the region, hunting and trapping. After the French defeat in the Seven Years' War, the Chippewa adapted and learned to deal with the British. By the time of the War of 1812, they supported the British, hoping a British victory would halt the encroachment of Euro-American settlers on their land. But when the Canadian border was finalized, the Chippewa found themselves living on land now considered part of the United States. What is now Pembina County was originally part of Minnesota Territory. On this date in 1867, it became the first county in what would eventually become the state of North Dakota, following the organization of Dakota Territory. Pembina County was originally enormous, encompassing what would later become many other counties, including Cass, Trail, and Richland. In 1887, it began to shrink as new counties were organized, eventually taking on the size and shape we recognize today. The name Pembina is derived from the Chippewa word for the high bush cranberry, which grew in abundance along the Pembina River. Pembina was home to a significant population of Métis descendants of French fur trappers and Native Americans. The Métis developed the Red River cart, a unique form of transportation with high wheels to handle mud, brush, and streams. The carts had no metal parts, making them easy to repair. Pulled by oxen, they could carry up to 900 pounds of fur and meat to markets in Canada and St. Paul, returning to Pembina with much-needed supplies. The largest single ethnic group to settle in Pembina was Icelandic. They were joined by Irish, English, and Scottish settlers from Canada, followed by Scandinavians, Germans, Russians, Belgians, Ukrainians, and others from around the United States. As a result, Pembina County is home to a rich, diverse, and very interesting cultural mix. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
I first became a member of Prairie Public when we moved back to North Dakota in 2007. We are members of Prairie Public because we love to listen to the diverse programming. We particularly love the Moth Radio Hour, StoryCorps, and just the different diverse perspectives. I have many driveway moments listening to Prairie Public, particularly with the Moth Radio Hour. I just can't seem to tear myself away without hearing how the story ends, and I just love the complete picture that Prairie Public paints for stories that are presented. I love the sustaining membership option of Prairie Public because it allows me to think about one less thing. I know that I'm contributing to Prairie Public every month, and it's not something I have to think about. I love knowing that my family and I are contributing to Prairie Public to help maintain the stories that you hear. I'm Erica Berg from Kindred, North Dakota, and I'm a proud sustaining member of Prairie Public.
Support all the things you love about Prairie Public by making a sustaining membership contribution. It's easy. Just go to prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145.
And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street. We hope you've enjoyed the week here with us on Prairie Public. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, it's The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. Jeremy asks the question, how do we solve America's loneliness problem? At 7 p.m. Central, we'll bring you Science Friday with Ira Flato. From all of us here at Prairie Public, as summer wanes, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend, and Main Street will be back with you Monday.